Thanks, everybody. I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to take a moment and thank Kent and Debbie for inviting me to come and participate in the Unity and Service Conference. This is a big deal, and I'm really thank you all for being here. And it's been a humbling experience for me so far, just being able to listen to the talks I've heard and the people and their love for service and what they've been doing in their lives and how they apply this. It just makes me feel proud to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my heart is full, and thank you so much for that. And I want to thank Claire for taking such good care of me, and you didn't set the record, but you came close to most emails sent for one speak engagement. Thank you for your devotion to organization. That was very nice. If I printed them out, I could do my bathroom and wallpaper. It was amazing. But I like that. I see that enthusiasm. I go, I like this drunk. That's my kind of drunk. Let's overthink it. Yeah, that's great. But I like that. I like that. And my new best friend, Dominic, for picking me up at the airport, which is an incredible spiritual experience, you know, just a couple of drunks. And we didn't spend a lot of time together. You know, he picked me up in Oakland, took me to Concord, you know, got me an awesome sandwich. We had lunch together. And he took me to the hotel, you know, and said, okay, dude. And he was gone, you know. And so maybe like an hour and 15 minutes, something like that, we hung, right? And in a short hour and 15 minutes, we fixed AA. It's not easy, but we were focused. We covered a myriad of topics. And a little feedback for you. AA is going to be fine, but you all need to pick up your game a little bit. Just telling you. Just need to pick up your game a little bit. So thanks, Dominic. That was awesome, man. I really enjoyed it. And I've been tasked and blessed with the opportunity to talk about home group. And what's a home group? Everybody goes, well, I know what a home group is. I got one, buddy. I've had one for 30 years. That's great. You know, I think a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't understand the significance spiritually of having a home group, of how deep this goes, how open it is, how endless the possibilities to be of service and grow spiritually are by simply being a member of a home group and what that represents. And the first thing I had to understand when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is what was the difference between a home group and a meeting? Because they would say that to me, oh, it's not a home group, it's a meeting. I didn't really get it, and I get it today, you know. And our literature in the AA group will tell you the main difference is that what ends at the meeting continues with a home group. So our 12-step work and a home group is not held in check by the geography of the meeting location or the duration of the time. Our 12-step work continues past that time and past the geography of the meeting hall. And that's the main difference that our literature states. But I think it's so much more than that. I'll give you an analogy. You know, when I wore much younger man's clothes, I played a lot of basketball. And I played basketball 7 days a week. And, I mean, it was my life. But I also played very high-level basketball. I played in high school. I was all-city in Los Angeles, and I played in junior college. And before that, in junior high, I played in club ball. We traveled all over the country. But I also played a lot of street ball. You go down to the local rec center, and there's some guys there, and you pick up sides, and you just play basketball. And to glance at it, if you didn't understand what was really going on, it kind of looks the same. Same ball, same court, same rules. Guys kind of doing the same thing, but it's very, very different. Because I'll tell you what, you take a street ball team and you put them against a real organized club team, a team that practices three times a week, a team that these guys have been together for years and years and years with one goal, and they will slaughter that street team. It's a completely different animal. And that's what happens in the difference between a meeting and a home group. See, a home group does spiritual preparation. A home group has a plan in action for what happens when a new man or new woman walk in the door. A home group goes to assemblies together. A home group gets information from their GSR as it's disseminated and shared among themselves. A home group talks amongst themselves at coffee and when they're out playing golf and they're doing the things socially because now they're friends and they have these friendships that are described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is there you will meet lifelong friends and commence your common journey shoulder to shoulder. So when you walk year after year after year with your heart in your mind attuned to the welfare of others, a plan develops. So when a new man or woman walks into a room, there's no discussion. There's not, what do we do? Who's going to talk to that guy? It just happens intuitively and naturally. And it doesn't happen in meetings. And I'm not saying meetings are bad. I go to meetings. Meetings have their purpose, but they are not a home group, and they do not serve the function of a home group. Many times new men will stumble into my home group, and my home group currently is the SOS men's group. Now, we meet on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock in St. James Church on 14th Street in the Fairhaven District of Bellingham, Washington. It's been my home group for the last 12 years. And every now and then, we'll get a new guy that stumbles in, and he can't believe what happens to him. And if he stays there, if he's lucky enough to stay there, and we'll do everything in our power to make sure he has a home there. He will share later with us what he was experiencing in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he was just going to meetings. He got a directory, and he was just picking meetings at random and going into them. He said, nobody talked to me. And I was so afraid, and I was so shaking, and I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't understand the language. And I sat in the back of the room, and the meeting would start, and people were laughing. They were telling these stories. I didn't know what they were talking about. And I stood up, and we all held hands and prayed, and everybody left. And they walked right by me like I wasn't even there. And I didn't know what to do or what to say, and I didn't know this stuff. They're talking about getting a sponsor, and I didn't know what that was. And I go, and I came to this group. He goes, I didn't even get in the door, and four guys grabbed me. And they introduced themselves, and they got me coffee. And then they walked me around the room, and they introduced me to all their friends. And they started asking me questions about myself. How long was I sober? Did I have a sponsor? Did I have a big book? Hey, would you come sit with us? Hey, what are you doing after the meeting? We're so glad you're here. This spiritual politeness, this invitation to a new life, can only be offered in a home group, in my experience. And it saves and changes lives. And we talk about the traditions, and the traditions to the group are what the steps are to the individual. And we talk about our first tradition. We talk about our unity. Well, what is our unity? Our unity is, I can't expect you to do it if I'm not willing to do it. That's the short form of unity. The next way to look at unity for me is, what kind of AA do I want? What do I want when I walk in my home group? Do I want to be fired up? Do I want to be filled up from the inside out? Do I want to see those people and go, man, it's so good to see you? Do I want to feel like we're actually standing for something and doing something together? Well, I have to participate in that. I have to bring that unity as an individual. And that's difficult for me because I'm important. And there's chatter in my head. And I have a big life outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's demanding. And sometimes I forget to change gears before I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm at the end of a 10 or a 12-hour day where I've been slaying dragons out there in the real world, thank you very much. And now I got to get to my home group, you know, where those guys are. You know those guys I sponsor that don't want to listen to what I have to say? Those guys. And I'm tired, and God, I've been doing this a long time, and that's a bad attitude to bring into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not bigger than that, and I don't have the power to do anything about that. So I have to bring the spiritual significance of unity in there, and I can't do that on my own, so I have to get together with God, my higher power, as I understand Him. And I have to ask for that before I get out of the rig. It's time for unity. I do sales for a living. I spend far too much time alone with the committee. You know what I mean? So when I get to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, anyone that knows me knows this. They've never seen me turn off my rig and get out, ever. Haven't done that since I was new. I shut it off, and I sit there, and I pray. And I say the same prayer I always say, some variation of this. God, I'm walking into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a lot on my mind. I'm thinking about business, I'm thinking about money, I'm thinking about how I'm going to pay my bills, I'm thinking about the football game, I'm thinking about this weekend trip, I'm thinking about everything that has nothing to do with what's going on in that room and what God would have me do. God, let me leave this in the parking lot where it belongs, safely in your care. I know it'll be here for me to pick up when I get out. Let me walk into the meeting and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me show in some degree by my actions and the way I carry myself how grateful I am for this undeserved gift. Now, what's interesting about that unity that we practice in our home group, detaching from our worldly affairs, leaving the politics and the money and the football and all the things that are interesting and part of a whole life, leaving them in the parking lot because they have no place in the meeting hall of Alcoholics Anonymous, that principle applies in all areas of our life. I used to come home from work, or I'd come home from a long night of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been married 20 years to Eileen, boy meets girl on AA campus. Sometimes it works. I love her like good poetry. Having said that, I will walk in after a long day of AA in work or a long day of work, and I used to walk in the house, and she'd say, "Hey, honey, what was your day?" And I'd think to myself, already with the questions. And she'd start telling me about what the dog had done that day or something that had happened that day. And I would look at her and I'd be exasperated. I'd go, honey, can I at least get my boots off? Can I get my boots off? And she'd go, fine, never mind, and walk away. And I've done it again because I'm not practicing unity in my home. And now I shut the rig off. And before I go in the house, I say a prayer like this. I say, God, I know there's a woman in that house. And I know she's been waiting to talk to me all day long about what I don't know. But I believe she's a gift from you, God, and my job is to show her that I love her the way that you love her. So please let me put my selfish needs aside and let me just be with her when I walk in that house. And the first thing I do when I come home is I find Eileen, whether she's in the backyard or she's upstairs or she's in the kitchen or she's on the couch with the dog watching TV, and I just sit down with her and I give her a kiss and I ask how her day is. And then I listen. You know what I found out? This big sacrifice I made for unity takes about 10 minutes. I was breaking my wife's heart for 10 minutes. And I start to see how these traditions go so much deeper than I really thought they did and how they can really change my life. I want to talk a little bit about group conscience. When I was new, my sponsor told me he would tell me what our group conscience was and what my opinion was, which was really wise. It gave me the opportunity to sit back. And I liked AA, and I liked the AA, the business of AA. You know, I love the meetings, but like a lot of times when you're new, we don't encourage new people to go to the business meetings. And it's crazy. We tell them, oh, you're not ready for that yet. You know, you might not understand what's going on. We're afraid it's going to rub them the wrong way. That's wrong. Newcomers love conflict. My first business meeting, two old timers got into it about something. I don't know what, but they were going at it like two rabid dogs, just going at it. And I'm sitting there chomping on my donut, drinking my coffee, smoking my Marlboro, you know, just. It was awesome. And then the most bizarre thing happened. After the business meeting, I'm ready because I'm a street guy. I know what's going to happen. They're going to find each other. They're going to talk it out. You know what I mean? And they went up and they're laughing and hugging. Go, boy, you really got me going in there. I got to tell you. And I'm like, okay, we're in bizarro world now. So everybody in this room, because you're affiliated with the service structure and you understand group conscience, you say the only thing that matters is how God expresses himself in our group conscience. Well, what does that mean? It means I got to be more concerned with what you think about something than what I think about it. Maybe your spiritual condition is better than mine this day. The more I care about something, the more I think I'm right, the more I better listen to you. My wants, my fears, and my desires will distort my view of reality, and they will make me think I know what's right, and it has gotten worse as I have stayed sober longer. Oh, it's awful. You know, I'm coming out, I'll be 25 years sober in about 13 days, and I'm like, oh, I've never been worse in terms of, like, having to practice a genuine humility, like it says in our long form of the 12th tradition. A genuine, not the one that you act like you've got humility, like a genuine, like, I don't know everything and mean it, you know, and, like, have to listen to people with, like, a tenth of the time you have, and they make a good point, and you have to go, Jesus, they're right, it's killing me, you know, and, informed group conscience. I want all the information. I want it all given to me. And then what? Then I want to vote on it. Nope. Something in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've experienced from the time I've come in, and we've changed it at my home group, and I'll tell you what we do. We don't vote on any motions the night they're presented. We discuss them endlessly. And we let everybody talk about it. Everybody get their opinion. We don't vote. We table it. We will vote next month. And the reason we do that is it introduces a principle that's not talked about much in the service structure, but it's in our literature. It's called prayerful consideration. You're asking God to express himself in our group conscience. Now, we're going to discuss something none of us knew we were going to discuss. We haven't read the motion. We haven't read the background information. We haven't read the intent. It's all going to be, and what's going to happen is my ego is going to be present. My ego is going to say, this is how I feel about this at the moment. And then there's other people stating their opinions, and that I might not agree with them. That just makes my ego bigger, not smaller. And suddenly, God's not in the room. If I really want God to express Him, don't I need to pray about it? Don't I need to meditate about it? Now, maybe you're a different cat than I am. Maybe you're more spiritually developed than I am. But I have a great deal of difficulty sometimes in a business meeting setting doing very productive prayer and meditation. I find that when I take the information in home and I can be alone and I can get on my knees and I can pray for God to give me an intuitive thought or idea and I can meditate about the information, quite often how I felt in that business meeting changes. And you know what else is interesting? The things I didn't think I was listening to or the things I thought I disagreed with start to seep in around the perimeter. And I hear them without emotion. And I see the truth in them. So we try to, in my group, practice prayerful consideration at all times. We don't vote right away. We give people a chance, like we say, go to our neutral corner and figure it out. I want to move on to the fourth tradition. You did a great job on that, by the way. By the way, I think the fourth tradition is incredibly sexy. I dig the fourth tradition. Because when I'm new, this is what I hear the fourth tradition. I can do anything I want. Pretty attractive, you know, as long as it doesn't affect other groups or AA as a whole. Yeah, details, you know. But I love the idea of autonomy. Autonomy is exciting. Autonomy is the rocket ship. Autonomy allows you to, when you set it, create the fellowship you crave. It is the straw that stirs the drink. It's our autonomy. Don't complain about your home group. Change it. What do you want? I moved from Los Angeles almost 13 years ago, 2004, coming up on 13, from the largest, most active, vibrant, activist, tradition-respecting, hard-charging, 12-step-carrying, couch-commitment-giving AA group in the country, the Pacific Group. I love that group. And I love my group today, but I'll tell you what, when I got there, it was different. And I was looking for the enthusiasm and the energy and the flow, and it wasn't there. And this is what I said, that's a shame. Boo-hoo, Don, what are you going to do? And I prayed and I meditated about it, and I got a clear answer. It said, we're going to see what kind of program you really have. And what I did is I got involved in my home group. And this group was not a home group at the time. And I'm going to give you a quick idea of what can happen with a group of drunks because of the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous and what happens in our service structure. So 12 years ago, I walk in this room, there's about 12 guys in there. They're a meeting. They're not a group. And it's a closed meeting. So I start attending the meeting on a regular basis. I decide I want to make it my home group, and I ask them why they're not registered. Nobody has an idea. And I said, well, we don't have to wait till we have enough guys to do everything there is to do. All we have to do is register as a group and make sure we have a GSR that's going to attend the district meeting, and I'll be the GSR. So we go ahead and we register with New York. And these guys were blown away because I come in with the GSR package. They go, where'd you get that? I go, they sent it to us. That's their job. They had no idea. They go, this is amazing. I go, yeah, isn't it? We start getting some enthusiasm in the group. Guys start making it their home group. The attendance starts going up. Now we're up to 25 guys. About 3 years into the deal, we got a service rep at every arm of the service structure attending the monthly meetings. We got a GSR coming back. We got guys that are going to the area assembly. They don't have to go. They just want to go and support our GSR. Things are happening. I become DCM of the district. We start looking at, we're growing, and guys are becoming home groups. We're using the yearly inventory the way it should be used. We're making our yearly inventory a spiritual piece of business. We're examining the 13 questions in the pamphlet, the AA group, and we're taking them and we're discussing them. We're not making motions. We're getting action items out of them. And then we're going back, and we're not dealing with them at our monthly business meeting. Because you deal with them at your monthly business meeting, it's an inconvenience. We set another night aside every month simply to review our inventory. And we had these growing pains along the way because we really respected the seventh tradition. We're one of these groups, we're not afraid to talk about money. And we started talking about money. We started talking about self-support, and we couldn't answer it. We're like, well, what is self-support? And we got the literature, and we looked at it, and it was vague in our opinion, you know? Because we're paying our rent, we're paying for our cookies, we're paying for our coffee. We got a little money left over, you know, we're kicking some money. to district. We're kicking, you know, 60 to district, 30 to area, 10 to GSO. But we don't know. We don't know if it's enough. So we contacted GSO. We said, what is self-support in GSO? And they couldn't give us a straight answer, but they gave us a range of what they felt it cost to facilitate for each group at Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this is like 8 years ago. And at the time, it was like $262 or something. And we were so far below that. And the guys, this is important. When our guys heard that we were that far below the suggested idea for a group donating, they felt terrible about it, and our donations went up. Then another guy said, why don't we do the birthday plan? And we introduced the birthday plan with everything going to GSO. Now, you fast forward, you know, like I said, I've been at the group 12 years, and currently right now, for the last 3 years, we're the largest donating group in our district, but we only meet twice a week. Yet we have the largest donations in our group. We've been donating over $500 a year, well past the suggested mark, to GSO. Now, this isn't about, look what we're doing and we're bettering you. What I'm talking about, the principle here was information. That when alcoholics received the information, they were told what they needed to do to become self-supporting, they opened their hearts and they opened their pocketbooks to them and became a spiritual piece of business. But we talk about money in a way that maybe would be offensive to some people, but we found that people can take it. Like, we talk about, like, hey, man, just because you didn't stop at the ATM, that's not the basket's fault. You know, you need to put the pinch on somebody sitting next to you and borrow $5. I'll tell you, in my sponsorship family, the basket does not suffer. And I'm not going to tell you what our suggested donation is, but we make that donation. And I'll tell you, if those guys don't have the money, they'll turn to me and go, sponsor, can I read you? And I'll go, absolutely, you know. But I'll tell you that, you know, the knife cuts both ways. And there have been a few nights where I open my wallet and I go, I couldn't believe there's no cash in there. And I got to turn to a guy I sponsor and go, and they just, oh, absolutely, sponsor, this is great, you know. They just couldn't be happier that I forgot to bring the money. But we talk about stuff like that. But we talk about the seventh tradition and how important it is at our group. But we didn't get there overnight. And once again, talking about autonomy, the thing about autonomy is we've got a lot of young guys in our group. We got a really weird mix, you know. We got some old dogs in there. We got some mid-range guys. But we got a lot of guys 5 years and under. A lot of guys in their first couple of years of sobriety. They're on fire with Alcoholics Anonymous, that are going to meetings, that are getting service commitments, that are starting to sponsor other guys. I mean, it's a lot of enthusiasm. But you got to keep, it's like herding cats, you know. And they're like we were when they're young. They need a lot of stuff to do. And so we started about 6 years ago. I came up with this idea, and I remembered it because my old home group, there was always something going on. You know what I mean? And I missed that. We're always playing ball on Saturdays, or somebody was putting a play on, or somebody was moving. There was a lot of activity. So you could keep your hands busy and keep your feet moving, you know, until God and the steps kind of calmed your head down. There was a lot of, and there wasn't any of that going on in Bellingham. So I made a suggestion. I said, let's have an activities chair. And they go, well, what's an activities chair? Well, you know, we'll give a commitment to somebody, and his job will be to take suggestions from other group members and come up with an activity that's affordable and a lot of fun, and then we can all do an activity outside of the rooms, and we'll make it a family night since we're a men's group. That way we can invite our wives, we can invite our significant others and our kids, and we'll make it affordable so it won't exclude the newcomer. And that'll be the criteria. And they said, well, would you do it? And I said, well, yeah, sure, I'll do it, you know. And so we came up with some ideas, and one guy said, you know, there's semi-pro hockey right down the road, and that might be a lot of fun. I go, okay, so I look into it, and it's not bad. It's like $14 a ticket. It's at a big arena. It's got really good reviews and everything. So I tell the guys, okay, we're going to go to hockey. This is going to be the date. I'm going to make the sign-up list. I'm going to put the sign-up list up. What I want you guys to do is sign up, tell me how many tickets you want, I'll order the tickets, and when they come in, you guys can pay me for them. Okay. So they say 70 guys, 70 tickets get signed up for. 70. And I got to tell my wife, by the way, you're going to see a $985 credit card charge for the Everett Arena. And she goes, what did you do? I said, I bought 70 hockey tickets for the guys. She goes, you bought 70 hockey tickets? You fronted 70 hockey tickets to Alcoholics? And you actually think you're going to get paid? I go, yeah, I actually do. I got to tell you, we have done, in the last 6-7 years, we've probably done 60-70 group events. And nobody's ever stiffed anybody. Everybody's always paid. And we've done everything. We've gone to the circus. We've gone to car races. And more importantly, we've done stuff like we had a guy. This was great. We had a guy in our group, you know, and he was an actor. You know, he had a straight job, but he loved theater and he loved drama, and he was part of this little group, and he was going to be in this play. And he came to us real sheepishly, and he goes, "Yeah, it's just community theater. It's not really good, you know, but it'd be nice if a couple of guys, you know, maybe came and supported me." Man, 65 male alcoholics went up there. And these guys, a lot of these guys, man, you know, they, trust me, they never been to a play. We'll just put it that way. You could tell who we were when the play started. But it's things like that, you know, and guys graduating from college, and we all go to support the guy graduating from college. And somebody's having a baby, and it's like, how many uncles do you have? And we're all in the waiting room, you know. And these things only happen in a home group. Many years ago, before I moved to Bellingham, I sponsored a really sweet guy. His name was Carlos, and I love Carlos like a brother. And Carlos was a guy that had been sober for a long time in AA, over 10 years, and he had gone out. And he had really torn himself up and torn his life up. But he was back in AA, and he'd put together about 3 or 4 years, and I'd sponsored him for that time. And I just loved the guy, but he had some physical ailments. And every winter, he would get these horrible respiratory infections. He'd have to be hospitalized. He'd be in the hospital for 3 or 4 days. And then he'd get out, and he'd make a recovery. And just like clockwork, this one winter, you know, Carlos went into the hospital. And I remember I visited him in the hospital. He could barely breathe. They got him on oxygen. And I just told him, "All right, the nurses are your sponsor. All right, do what they tell you." And I kissed him on the forehead, and I said, "I'll call you tomorrow." And I left. And the next day, I called up to check on him, and they said, "Are you a relative?" And I do, you know, what we're taught in this program. I lied, and I said, "Yes, I am." And, at least they, what they taught me. And they say he's been transferred to intensive care, and they put me over to intensive care, and they asked me the same question, "Am I a relative?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And they said, "Well, so sorry to tell you, but he expired during the evening." And I hung the phone up, you know, and I had to pull my car over. I was just crying. And my next thought was his mother, man. Because his mother didn't speak a word of English. And I knew that she was going to find out. And I had met her a few times. I had her number, you know. And by the time I had called her, the relatives were over there, and she was hysterical. And they didn't know what they were going to do. And I'll tell you what, his AA brothers in my home group at the time, you know, 3 days later, there was a church. And there was a beautiful, beautiful memorial for this guy. And there was 250 people in that church. And his mother sat there in the saddest day of her life. And she sat there with tears going down her face, but she kept looking out among you with a smile on her face as she cried. And she said to me in broken English, "I had no idea how many people loved my boy." And I'm not saying that we took away or lost, but Alcoholics Anonymous in a home group setting, the thing we're able to do that we can't do alone, that the long form of the first tradition, that I'm just a small part of a large whole. And I love that AA tells me in that tradition that I am going to have to make sure that you survive if I have any shot at surviving at all. That we're going to have to hang together, or surely all of us are going to hang alone. And so I continue to march in my home group, and we're big on the service structure in my home group. We're not one of those home groups that keep newcomers away from it. We encourage people to participate. And what we start doing is what we've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. We invite, we invite, we invite. And that means that we take people to our committee meetings with us. I think one of the worst things about the service structure is a lot of people don't experience it until they actually have a job in it. And all of our service structure meetings, whether it's our district meeting, our area meetings, our committee meetings, are open to any AA member that wants to come. And so we start dragging our new guys along just to keep us company. And we invite them the same we were invited. "I could really use your help, you know." You always preach to the ego. It always seems to work well. Our fifth tradition states that we have but one primary purpose: to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And that seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? One of the things that I was taught, and one of the things I try to practice in my life, is realize that everything I see in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether I agree with it or disagree with it, whether I like it or don't like it, doesn't matter what my personal opinion on it. Behind that, there's only one thing. You see, right now, I know something. And you all know it too. It may not be at the top of your consciousness, but I know you know it too. You see, we're here this afternoon in Concord, California, on Saturday, and we're safe and we're sane and we're sober. But But I know something as much as I'm standing here right now. At this very moment, not very far from here, maybe within earshot of this hotel, there's a man or a woman physically dying from the disease of alcoholism. There's probably more than one of them. There's probably a lot of them. And what they don't know yet, and we do, is that they're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. They're just finishing up their story. They're running out of whatever little bit of self-will and whatever self-generated hope that tells them that maybe they can handle it themselves one more day. They're starting to run out of that. And they're going to arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know this. And they're going to come here like we came here. They're not going to come here necessarily looking for us. They won't know what they're looking for. Because they'll be out of hope and they'll be out of answers and they'll be out of chances. And they're just going to come in like desperate people do, looking for something, clinging for something. Please, maybe there's an answer here. And the question we have to ask ourselves as members of Alcoholics Anonymous in the home group setting is, where will we be when they arrive? And more importantly than where will we be is how will we be? I think this tradition speaks to so much more than what I think AA's job is. I think it speaks to what I think my job is as an individual AA member. What am I willing to leave outside the door? Because I've been here a long time. I have friends in the room on any given night that are like brothers to me. I love these guys. I want to talk to them. I want to tell them what's going on in my life. I want to hear what's going on with theirs. And we do that in Alcoholics Anonymous because we love each other and we become a family. But I can never take my eyes off the door and I can never take my eyes off the room and I can never forget why I'm really in that room. Many years ago, I had a fantastic experience. I hope I never forget it. I was sitting in a clubhouse in Los Angeles, and I was about 10 years sober, and sitting with one of my best friends at the break of the meeting. And I hadn't seen him in a couple of weeks, which is like it's a lifetime when you're a drunk. It's like 2 weeks. Oh, my God. And we're sitting there together, and we're like a couple of old hens catching up, you know. We're just like staring deeply into each other's eyes and laughing and talking about what's been going on and completely oblivious to anybody in the room, including anyone that might be new. This old-timer named Jim slid up behind us like those old-timers do, and I didn't even see him come in, and he dropped his head between us and put his arms around our shoulders and said, "That's okay, boys. We'll bring the newcomers to you." So when I'm in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we talk about it a lot, what's a business meeting for? Well, that's where the GSR comes and gives a report. No. Well, that's where we find out about corrections and treatment. No. That's where we find out about the hot new literature. No. All that stuff happens. It's going to happen at every meeting. It's not why we have the business meeting. We have the business meeting to promote our primary purpose. So on a monthly basis, we can take our pulse, we can take our temperature, and see how are we doing in fulfilling the requirement, the obligation, the sacred chance to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. How are we doing in fulfilling that? How are guys doing? When we have our yearly group inventory, you know who we want to talk to? We want to talk to all the new guys in the group, nobody else. We sit there and we go, okay, you tell us, how are we doing? I don't know. Well, tell me what your experience was when you got here. We want to know. Did you feel welcome? Were you brought into the middle? Were you given a job? Were you shown how to do it? Were you invited or told to do something? Were you invited to do something with somebody else? We want to know how we're doing and fulfilling that. We have that monthly business meeting so we can see how we're doing, so we don't lose track of our primary purpose. Because without that, we will lose track of it. We will get distracted by all the gifts that we have in our life. And that's what I love so much about the long form of the 12th tradition. It says that we believe anonymity has an immense spiritual principle. That we are to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings never spoil us. And we live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us. I had these great blessings in my life. I had this great life. I live in a wonderful house in a beautiful part of the country with a great woman, with a terrific dog. The dog's so cool, he's called the Wonder Dog. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful place. And I had these great blessings, but I can forget what my primary purpose is. I can be distracted. I can be spoiled by my great blessings, and I don't want to do that. I do want to live in thankful contemplation. Thank you, God. Let me think about what you've done for me, and let me think about the work you have for me. So when we have that monthly business meeting, it's not about business. It's about the man or woman that hasn't arrived yet, and will we be prepared? You see, I go to my meeting every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. That's my home group meeting. And for me, it's just Wednesday night. But there have been many nights where I know a man walked in just like I did on September 16th, 1991, and it wasn't Wednesday night for him. For him, it was seconds and inches. That might be his last opportunity. The window of opportunity that allowed him to get into Alcoholics Anonymous, the window that opens and closes right behind you. And he may never make it to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to ask myself, what am I going to be like when he gets there, and how am I going to be? I want to talk about the 11th tradition, and I want to talk about, and Debbie did such a great job talking about attraction. Attraction is so much more than, because everybody's attracted to different things. But I know universally, you know what everybody's attracted to? You know who I like? I like people that like me. You know what I do with new guys? I don't care what their face says. And I don't care how tough guy they are. And I don't care how miserable they are. They're supposed to be that way. If it was good out there, they wouldn't be in here. But I let them know I like them. And I don't say it. I act like I do. Because they acted like they liked me when I got here. And I couldn't figure it out. I was a loser. I just destroyed my life. Yet I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you were so nice to me. Oh my God, kid, you're back. That's great. How many days has it been? Come on in. Oh, I know you're going to make it. I think I'm glad he knows. But it's attractive. Walk into the meeting halls clean. Because I can't see your good life. I can't see God in your life. I can't see how you changed everything. I can't see where you came from. That's a problem for a guy like me. Look at me. This is how I looked when I was new. Greasy hair down my back, full beard with food stuck in it. Audio visual hallucinations, you know. I'm trying to talk to new guys, right? They're looking at me. I can see it on their face, like, you haven't been where I've been. You know, I got this friend Bob. He's got this great thing. He goes, that's the problem, man. We've changed so much. We got old. We look all lame and straight and stuff. He goes, man, we need to wear T-shirts with like a mugshot. From like the day we showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And like, just wear your coat over it, man. So when the new guy, you know you're losing the new guy's attention, you go, hey, I know you don't believe this, but this is what I look like when I get here. Ha! And then, new guy be like, oh my God, will you sponsor me? You know. So how are we going to be attractive? This program of attraction, not promotion. I got to maintain this personal anonymity, the love of press, radio, films, and TV. That's easy. I can't tell you the last time CNN knocked on my door and wanted to talk to me. That's easy. That's not a big deal. But it's deeper than that, isn't it? Anonymity. Like, I don't tell people about you. I'm not going to go home and tell people what you said here unless I ask your permission first. I don't tell stories about other people in AA unless I have their permission. Not just about my anonymity. It's about protecting yours. But it's about attractive. Make sure that meeting hall's clean, that coffee's made, that literature's out early. It's inconvenient, isn't it? I'm sober forever, man. I don't need one more meeting. I think I'll survive without getting there a half an hour early. Yeah, but the new guy might not. I got to be there, man. I got to be there to welcome him cordially like he welcomed me. I got to make sure the coffee's ready and the cookies are put out. We got to be nice. Got to be nice. Got to talk up to the new man or woman. Not talk down to them. Talk up to the new man or woman. That's what they need. They need that hand up. They don't need to be put down. They're as low as they're going to get. There's no rank and file here in Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to reduce his feelings of difference so he can start to take actions he does not yet believe in. And the home group's great. This is modern AA. We have to remember that. I heard somebody say, we've lost our 12-step legacy. Oh, that just, it upsets me. And they want to talk about the history, you know. They went out and they went to the hospitals and they went here and the phone rang all night and they grabbed drunks and nobody's even been on a 12-step call. And you haven't? I'm on 12-step calls all the time right in my home group. You see, the 12-step work hasn't gone away. The location has changed. Only alcoholics could be so self-centered and so oblivious that we think because they're in the meeting hall, it isn't 12-step work anymore. They're coming. We've got tremendous cooperation from the treatment centers, from the courts, from all these people that we didn't have that cooperation with in the beginning because either it didn't exist or they didn't know what we were. And now there's a conveyor belt of misery right to the clubhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous, right to your home group. All you have to be is get there with a big spiritual catcher's mitt and you'll be catching newcomers left and right. They'll just be coming right in at you. We have not lost our 12-step legacy. It has just changed location. And 12-step work is now done in the meeting hall, which is why it's so important that we don't turn the home group meeting hall setting into a social event. It is a 12-step center. If you go to your home group to do 12-step work, you will change and save lives and ensure your own recovery. If you go there to check in and see your friends and what's up, yeah, I had it done today. How you like it? Somebody might die. Because we're the ones, we're blessed with certain skills and aptitudes, and we have a common experience, and we have a common solution. We can reach them when nobody else can. And if God is everything or else he's nothing, that person's there for a reason that night. And if I'm not paying attention and I'm not spiritually connected, what if that reason was to meet me? But I had a big day at work, and I got a trip coming up, and I'm tired from the gym, and I'm not spiritually connected. And God sent one of his kids for me to help, and I missed it. Oh, well, I guess there's another meeting tomorrow night. Maybe not for that guy. Maybe not for that girl. What we do here is incredibly important, and it's an honor and a privilege. I can't think of anything more important than in some small way having the opportunity to participate in the resurrection of another human being. And we are granted nothing less than that simply by being members of Alcoholics Anonymous and all these opportunities to participate in what we do. I got a minute left. I've really said most everything I want to say. I'll close with this. I owe a great debt to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that. I think most of us feel that. But really what I've been thinking about probably for the last decade, what I've really tried to do more than anything is be that guy who creates that environment where recovery can happen, where I don't try to overcome everything by myself. I want company. I crave that fellowship. I invite people into my home. I invite people into my heart. I bring them along with me. And what's happened through sponsorship, sponsoring guys and having them catch fire with Alcoholics Anonymous and them sponsoring guys and them catching fire, what's happened is we have this enthusiasm. Let me tell you, spirituality is the word of the day in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll tell you what cannot be defeated, and it's the most valuable thing you can have in your AA group, and that's spiritual enthusiasm. You get an alcoholic who's on fire with this thing, who's not afraid to look you in the eye and say that AA is the best damn thing that ever happened to him. You'd be a fool to miss this. You turn them loose on newcomers, and miracles will happen. Thanks for listening.